The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Proudly sponsored by Volkswagen. Volkswagen.ie.
Yeah, 51551. If you want to text us, child and adolescent psychotherapist Colm Nochtor joins us in studio to deal with any of your parenting issues. How are you doing, Colm?
Good, thanks, Ray. And you?
Do you see more people over the Christmas period? Is it a stressful time for families?
Yeah, it is a stressful time, and you'd oftentimes think that stuff comes to the surface over Christmas. So January's busier than prior to Christmas. I think people are kind of hectic getting ready for it, but putting all the families in the cabin fever situation of Christmas for 2 weeks things tend to boil over.
So it brings issues to the fore, to the surface.
Yeah, I mean, our peak rates are always kind of March, April, May when exam season starts, September, October when school's back, January. Those are the three peaks in the year.
We said you were coming in and we got a number of emails from people who want your advice. Dear Ray Coleman, my 15-year-old has some mental health issues. Dad left when she was young and she suffers from depersonalization, derealization disorder. She's doing really well and is on a low dose of antidepressants and getting therapy, attending a psychiatric unit. We don't live in Ireland, so we got help within 24 hours of her getting ill. The thing is, she absolutely hates me. She can't stand me. How I eat, how I behave, how I talk, comments I make according to her, I'm always screaming, which I never do. By the time we get to school in the morning, she has criticised me 8 or 9 times. It is like character assassination. I prepare her breakfast, have slept in her bed with her in my arms while she was sick. I cook, clean, work, etc. Everything is prepared for her and I spend time with her as much as she can stand. She's a good girl in school and otherwise in every way. I am like a lightning rod to her. She takes it all out of me. I'm starting to show symptoms of how I'm being treated. Of course, I should be the adult and I am, but there comes a point where a human, that's me, cannot live like this.
Yeah.
So just depersonalization, derealization disorder. Yep. Tell us about that.
Depersonalization is where you have this feeling that you're outside of yourself. It's a dissociative disorder. So you get these experiences of almost like you're looking in from outside on things that are happening. And it can usually happen in times of high levels of anxiety. And derealization is almost like you feel your environment isn't real. So if you're familiar with the movie The Truman Show, it's almost like is this a dream or reality? And again, kind of they're perceptual dissociative disorders that would happen periodically.
It's scary stuff.
Yeah, I mean, they're fairly serious diagnoses there. And thankfully, this girl is in treatment for those things and she's on an antidepressant and attending a therapy clinic. The difficulty here is that this is common, and I'm afraid to say, in terms of parents or mostly mothers becoming the kind of, that sounding board for every frustration within my life. And this 15-year-old girl is going through way more than any 15-year-old should expect to be going through. These symptoms are serious, they're frustrating, they are debilitating from a lot of from points of view. And we do take it out on those who are close to us. And the other thing to understand here is these are perceptual disorders, so her perception of things is going to be distorted by the nature of her condition. So when she feels that her mum is screaming at her when her mum's not, that's just her truth. That's how she's seeing it. And when she's in that space, there isn't a dad on the scene here, so mum is going to is getting double dosed as the sounding board for this. It is incredibly common that these relationships become really fractious and really difficult, escalating into physical stuff at times. And it's really hard to manage because although this lady says, you know, I'm the adult here, adults still have feelings. You know, it doesn't mean that you can be this kind of robotic and absorb that sort of trauma, which
so
it
how,
is.
So what advice would you give her?
I mean, I think the issue here is to try and mend that relationship as best as possible. And if they're in a service, there's some wonderful relationship counsellors and relationship therapists that can work through this stuff and help to allow this daughter to see her mum as something different. But also, and this might sound really critical and I don't mean it to, but mum might be doing things that are irritating this girl unbeknownst to mum. And there's a belief that, and I hear parents saying this a lot, you know, I've done everything for her. I do this and I do that. And you list off the tasks. That doesn't guarantee a good relationship. And in an unrealistic world, it should.
Yeah.
But the fact that, you know,
I bought you this, I bought you that, yeah. I feed you, yeah, all that
and,
sort of
and
thing.
And,
yeah.
You know, the roof over your head piece, 15-year-old and teenagers don't necessarily value that as something exceptional. They will when they're parents themselves, but at that moment, that doesn't really count for an awful lot. And
it's a given, in their words.
Yeah, and it's not a sense of entitlement or anything, it's just that that frame of the reference within their world doesn't include those things. And like, I've had parents say, look, I bring her to camogie matches, I collect her, I have a taxi, and then the child might say, but you never ask me how I feel.
Right.
You know, and so in the doing, the frantic doing, we tend to not ask how it's going. And it's about moving from doing to emotionalizing and almost trying to see it
it's
from
nearly,
her perspective.
You know, to use this word, the mindfulness parenting is to be in the moment sometimes. So not always hurrying here, there and everywhere and doing and doing and doing and just sitting and talking.
Just stopping,
yeah.
And asking what it is that you can do.
Yeah.
In this situation where this seems like this child is perceiving everything her mum is doing is nagging, irritating. She's 15 years of age, and so her mum is going to be the most uncool person in the world, and everything that she's going to do is going to be wrong. That will change in time.
It will pass.
Yeah.
I suppose that's the reassuring thing.
Yeah, and it does. And they could do it some help. But I'd say for this lady herself, I would get her own therapy or support. And because she says, I'm starting to show symptoms of the way I'm being treated. And it is. This is hard stuff for any parent who's dealing with this. It's relentless and it's soul destroying. And you do need somewhere to take your stuff and offload it.
That's good advice.
And that's certainly where I'd go first.
Right. Coleman, my wife is convinced that I have a problem with my phone addiction, that it's never out of my hand long enough to spend real time with the children. Personally, I think she's overstating it. And she's every bit as bad as I am. Anyhow, does Coleman have any advice to help, and that's in inverted commas, me spend better quality time with the kids and her?
Yeah, this is what we call cognitive dissonance, where if there's somebody worse than you, then you don't see the faults in yourself in some respects. So there's always another person who's worse.
Well, there always is somebody worse and better than you, isn't there?
But from the point of view of both these parents seem to be quite tech friendly in their use of their phones and things, and it is like, it is something we don't realise how much we do, and it's only when it's pointed out to us that we tend to realise, gosh, I it's not out of my hand. And from a parenting point of view, this is not to instill a whole raft of parenting guilt, but there is real issues out there where children, as I say to you, 5 years ago, I'd say all I heard was mum saying, I can't access my daughter because she's stuck behind a screen. All I hear now is teenagers saying, I can't access my mum because she's stuck behind a screen. And so we've taken this, if you can't beat them, join them approach to technology, where it's the first time that the young have taught the old, and we're later to the curve. And we established this kind of really excuse that it's a work thing, and the reason I'm emailing over breakfast because I have to respond to this thing. And we can make all the excuses in the world, but from the point of view of self-regulation is really difficult. And this is the issue I take all the time. We could take all the creepy stuff off the internet. It wouldn't stop us playing Candy Crush for four hours. It's not always the inappropriate stuff that's the problem. It's actually regulating our own desire that's the problem.
You know, it's a really straightforward thing, and it's actually sad that I have to say this, but making eye contact with your children, like,
phenomenally important,
isn't it?
Absolutely. There's a beautiful saying, I think it was Winnicott says, you know, the mother holds the child in her gaze. So that connection is where you hold anxiety of the, or the worries of the other person. And the eyes are the windows to the soul. I firmly believe that. And the whole culture of selfies and all that is about the gaze of the other. It's so important. But if we have to fight to get
that,
the gaze of someone, then we're going to look to what behaviour creates the look. And oftentimes it's misbehaviour. If you're away on your phone, it's only when one of the children hits the other one that you look up.
To get the attention,
And you have to catch them being good. For this man, I would say very simply, sacred spaces. And I'd say this relentlessly. It's not going to the cinema, because that's where you switch it. You have to switch off your phone, but you're not connecting. Something like you do something together. And it's simple stuff. It's like building a fort with the cushions or a game of Scrabble.
Yeah.
We went to Santa last Saturday in the Jervis and got a Jenga thing.
Yeah.
We've got so much crack out of that Jenga.
We played headband at the weekend.
And it's those things. You actually, if you're not doing that stuff, you forget how good it is.
Yeah.
And it's just that lovely connected moment.
It's terrible that we have to advise people on that.
Oh, look, this is ridiculous. We have to prescribe people time to themselves. Like, I was saying about mindfulness, and I'm a fan of mindfulness, but I don't think we could sell that in the 80s. You know, it's because we live in this mindless society that this stuff has become prescriptively important.
Right, so get off your phone.
Sacred spaces.
Coleman, my 7-year-old daughter is constantly gyrating on chairs to get pleasure. I asked her why she did it and she said she loves the feeling of her bum being massaged and tickled. She does it at every opportunity, the dinner table, library, and tries to go into the office to do her homework as the chair there is slightly bumpier. I asked if she did it in school and she said yes, but the children on her desk ask her to stop as she's rocking the table and disturbing them. The teacher even asked her to take a drink of water after a stint as her face was so red. It's extremely embarrassing. Any suggestions?
Yeah, the first thing, I mean, this is really common, unfortunately. Not unfortunately, but it is common and people really have a difficulty. And this is...
What is it?
It's a sensory issue, right? And it freaks people out because of the connotations that there's something sexual. So that's just a socialization process. When children are 3 years of age and they're running around with their nappy over their head, we're all laughing and joking, but they did it in Tesco's when they're 7, we'd have an issue with it. So The behavior hasn't changed. The world has changed around them. So this is no longer
the expectation
acceptable.
Of their behavior. Yeah.
Absolutely. We have to socialize them. And this is really hard because you can't even Google this. Do you know what I mean? If you're sexualized behavior with children, you know, where do you go with it? There's all these kind of connotations to it. So people feel really lost and parents really freak out by this and they get really disturbed that is this a sign of abuse or is there something that's happened? Quite simply, children are kind of polymorphously stimulable. They can, you know, get blankies and rubbing the eyelids and all. They just find these things pleasurable and sometimes genitalia is the source of that. At 7, she's just barely at the age of reason. She's prepubertal. So this isn't, and I think the worry is this is kind of a precocious onset of puberty or something. It's absolutely, I wouldn't imagine it's that at all. This is just something that she finds pleasurable and she does it. And it's not sexualized from her point of view, it's sensory. So from the point of view, but the handling of it has to be so sensitive.
Yes,
the thing.
Yeah.
I mean, Freud gets a lot of stick around the Oedipal phase and all that. Basically, the importance of this is when you introduce this stuff, you're introducing the concept of shame and disgust to a child. So you're basically saying you have something that you should be hiding and ashamed of. And the introduction of that is so important. You know what I mean? And you get this. If you touch that again, we're going to cut it off and all these sorts of potentially traumatic type things.
You go blind.
Yeah, and it's about trying to introduce this in a way that it's a socialization. You need to do this in the privacy of your own space and other people might misinterpret what you're doing as something else. You're not saying it's wrong, you're not saying you should be ashamed of it, but you should learn ways to privatize it, if that makes sense. That's not the right word.
So that's what they have to say to their daughter.
Yeah, this isn't about her feeling shameful of her body. It's not about her feeling
that
she has something wrong.
That's difficult to communicate, isn't it?
It's incredibly difficult because she's 7 and she's not going to get the nuances that it's about. And she's just saying, you're saying there's something I'm doing which is wrong. And she's not necessarily misbehaving. Do you know what I mean? She's behaving in a way that the world doesn't accept.
Finds inappropriate, yeah.
And so it's really just trying to coach her through kind of that her body is something that's...
And she'll come out the other side.
Of course, yeah. And again, if this was rubbing your eyelids with a pillow or having some sort of a sensory thing that you liked or picking your nails or biting or anything, we wouldn't have half the connotation. It's because it's where it is that we create the problem around it. I wouldn't freak out about it. I would certainly not let her feel ashamed of it, but just trying to coach her really gently into maybe doing that less in front of other people.
And it's common.
Common, very, very common.
There's consolation very, very in common. That, isn't there?
But you don't have a lot of parents coming forward. This is a radio question because you want to be anonymous. You really are struggling with it. And it's not something you tell your pals about because you genuinely fear for how they'll view your child.
Yes. Okay, I hope that works out. Coleman, I have 4 children, age range 12 to 5. The problem is the older ones watch more grown-up cartoons on Cartoon Network. The younger ones want to do all the things the older ones are doing. But he gets distressed and acts out with hitting after seeing some of these cartoons like Teen Titans. Should he be watching them? It's hard to separate him from the rest of the herd. Any advice? This is obviously common in families with age ranges.
Yeah, and I think... If Teen Titans is the extent of it, this is going to get worse. Because the 12 to 5, I mean, they're going to have, they're different ages, so they're different levels of understanding, especially if this 5-year-old is acting out the stuff that they're seeing. It just shows that they're impressionable and they're vulnerable. And we really do have to watch the content that children watch. There's no kind of definitive evidence that watching violence things makes us violent. But from the point of view of children mimic, and so they see that sort of stuff, they get involved in rough play and struggle with kind of what looks like tomfoolery, but then they start getting injuring each other and all that. sort of stuff. But from the point of view of the 12-year-old watches 12-year-old stuff and the 5-year-old watches 5-year-old stuff. And this is where the Fortnite thing and all that comes into a crapper, because they say, oh, 5-year-old in class has Fortnite. But they're really, it's their 13-year-old brother has it.
Yes.
But you're going to say to your mom that... Yes, my 5-year-old mate has it, and from that point of view, and parents need to be much, much more clued in to what this stuff is, because they'll just follow them into the room. I've an 8, 6, and a 4, and the 4-year-old is mad to play the Wii the same as the 8-year-old does, and gets frustrated when
so
he can't.
So what do you do then?
You separate it, and you parent them differently according to their ages. And no, it's a pain, because it's much handier to send them all to bed at 7, 8 o'clock. But actually, in fact, they should have different bedtimes. They should allow them to have a little bit more independence, that there's a separateness between these three. And that's not favouritism. That's just tailoring your parenting to the age of your child.
In an ideal world.
I think that's possible, though.
Is it? Yeah.
And I think that the surveilling what they're doing stuff is, it's about kind of being alert.
I suppose
to that
if
stuff.
You have the luxury of a couple of televisions, you're sort of fine. You're sorted.
and that's a first world answer to things. You know, in terms of rather than having them fight over one, we'll get them two. But and then it is a practical solution if you can afford it. Yeah, you know, from the point of view, it takes out the routing.
I'd say most
things,
people have two televisions now. I think I read statistics.
Would think probably more five.
Yes, more five. Right, sure.
But from the point of view, it's just about making sure that the 5-year-old isn't overexposed to stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, and I guess, as I said, the Teen Titans stuff wouldn't be, it'll be when they're watching over 18s and 15s.
It's not age appropriate. That's really the bottom line, isn't it, there?
Yeah, and it's labour intensive to have to watch this stuff. This is stuff we wouldn't have to watch before. Like, I was saying to someone before, like, I used to watch Bosco right till I was about 12. And not because I had some sort of developmental delay, but it's just that was all that was on. But from the point of view, that wasn't a worry mam had. But now, with 900 channels, we've a different challenge ahead of us.
Coleman, thanks very much. I hope you have a lovely, peaceful Christmas.
And you, Ray.
And thanks for everything. That's Coleman Nocter there. That's it from us. Mary Wilson's on the way. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday.
The Ray Darcy Show. Listen back on the RTE Radio Player.